Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello, and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes one episode at a time, the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Corporal Captain Rob Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP tent is Major Zaki Hassan. Hello, Zaki.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. We're here to talk about Season 1, Episode 3, Requiem for a Lightweight, which aired on October 1st, 1972. Now, I'm sure anyone who's listening to this show knows that Zaki and I did an episode all about the MASH series for FW Presents back in September. And so we talked about how Zaki got into the show and on DVD and stuff. And now you mentioned, though, that your kids watch it with you, which is sort of fascinating to me.
Yeah, my oldest, he's 11, and basically when I started my rewatch, which was right around the time I talked to you, I wasn't like, come sit down, boy, you're going to watch this. I just started watching, and then he just kind of sat and watched, and then before you know it, it just became a regular thing. So now it's just a thing that we do. Usually on the weekends, we'll watch like Saturday and Sunday morning. We watch a couple episodes.
I'm fascinated that he's into it, because it's like I'm trying to imagine what an 11-year-old gets out of it. Does he just think it's funny? Is that, I mean, it's like
he does think it's funny. I mean, most of the references are obviously going to go past his head, but I'm hoping it's going to be one of those things where as he gets older, I mean, he'll appreciate more of the richness of what was being said. I mean, I think to be honest, it's working for him on the level that it worked, to some extent for you when you were younger, which is, you know, these are characters who you enjoy and you enjoy spending time with, and you like being a part of their hijinks.
Yeah.
I mean, we're six seasons in at this point. We're into the Winchester era, and I mean, literally, he'll be like, "Oh, can we watch MASH?" And he'll remind me, "Oh, okay, we haven't watched MASH this week," and then I put it on for him.
That makes me feel so good to hear that. That's just great,
It's something very special for me. I mean, my oldest and I, we tend, like, because we watched the West Wing together. We went through that whole series. So it's funny just how, like, his sort of foundational pop culture is being shaped by all this stuff that's, decades before he was even born.
Now, your oldest is not the one who you have mentioned on Movie Film that wants to kill you, right? That's not that one?
That's my second.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. He's the Frank Burns of my household.
Everyone should know there's audio evidence that if something ever happens to Zaki mysteriously.
Yeah, there's a trail of breadcrumbs that I've parceled out every few weeks on my podcast.
So it's good to know. We'll find out whether podcasts are admissible as evidence. I think that's probably
right.
New case law that needs to be settled or something. So, well, anyway, that's fantastic, because the only way MASH is ever going to survive as anything other than a museum piece is if the younger generation sees it and enjoys it, because I think MASH has more to offer than, maybe some other shows that are just nostalgia pieces, So that's great.
Yes.
That an 11-year-old finds it entertaining. That makes me feel just wonderful.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So anyway, the episode we're here to talk about, as I mentioned, is Requiem for a Lightweight. It was written by Robert Klein and directed by Hi Averback. And the plot is such is that Hawkeye and Trapper are delighted to meet a new nurse, the beautiful Margie Cutler, played by Marcia Strassman, Mrs. Cotter from Welcome Back, Cotter. But that quickly goes sour with Hot Lips when Hot Lips has her transferred because she's such a distraction for the doctors. Doctors don't argue with that conclusion, but they welcome a distraction like Nurse Cutler. Henry agrees to have Cutler reassigned back to the 477th if one of them will volunteer to fight in the inter-camp boxing tournament sponsored by General Barker, played by Sorrel Book, Boss Hogg from the Dukes of Hazzard. After some cajoling, Hawkeye talks Trapper, who did some boxing in school, into it. Trapper goes into training using Frank's duffel bag as a punching bag. Once they meet Barker's boxer, however, they realize they are way out of their league. Trapper's opponent is a giant monosyllabic tower of a man who once punched out a Jeep. So, of course, they decide to cheat. With the help of the anesthetist Ugly John Orchard, they plan on smothering Trapper's glove with ether, which will hopefully knock out the goon before he can land a punch. They share the plan with Henry, who was all in. Frank expresses his displeasure with the idea of cheating. The fight begins with Henry and Barker betting a tidy sum of money on the outcome. After a few moments of Trapper running around the ring trying to avoid getting decked, they discover mid-fight that Frank and Hot Lips have switched the ether out and replaced it with water. Trapper is in real trouble. Hawkeye runs off to grab the ether, while Trapper fights for his life. After Trapper gets decked at least once and sent to the mat, Hawkeye manages to get the correct stuff on the glove. In the next round, Trapper sticks it in the goon's face, knocking him out. The plan works, sending the giant plummeting over the side of the ring right onto Frank and Hot Lips. Henry lives up to his part of the bargain and delivers Nurse Cutler. Both doctors make their move, but Hawkeye, in a rare moment, is pushed aside once she learns that Trapper actually fought for her. And that's the end of the episode. So Zachy, why did you want to talk about this one?
Well, I enjoy these early episodes, especially since as I'm further and further in my rewatch. I mean, it feels like a MASH period piece, you know. So the cement is still wet. You know, you can see the character relationships still sort of working themselves out. And I think what's interesting to me, really, because I just revisited it, I mean, not even an hour ago, is how the Hawkeye Trapper relationship, I mean, they nailed it right from the jump.
Mm-hmm.
And so really, like, you didn't see the first season struggles that a lot of shows have, where you have, you know, sometimes 6 to 8 episodes of sort of figuring out the dynamics. I mean, really, they figured stuff out pretty quick. You know, we're 3 episodes in, and what you have is pretty much a quintessential MASH episode that's representative of most of those first 3 seasons.
Yeah, you're right. Rogers and Alda had their chemistry down very quickly. I love the bit where when they walk out of Henry's office and Trapper's so mad that he punches his hand. And yeah. Hawkeye's like, "Ow, that sound! It hurt my ears." And I love that Trapper's like, "Don't tussle me." I love that he's totally into. He knows that Hawkeye is trying to pull one over on him. I love that they have that relationship already. That he's on to Hawkeye's tricks. I think that's great.
Well, and I like the thing where they race each other to Nurse Cutler's quarters, and you know, Trapper picks the flowers, then Hawkeye's got the pantyhose, and they both arrive at the same time, and Hawkeye's like, "Oh, are those for me?" And Trapper's like, "Only if you wear those."
Yeah, they're terrific together. So they nailed it right from early on. And it occurs to me that this plot is very kind of something like I can imagine Abbott and Costello would have done. It has that kind of like putting someone in the ring to achieve something. You could totally picture.
No, it's funny. Just last week, I watched Abbott and Costello Meet the Invisible Man.
Oh, right, with the boxing plot, right? Yeah,
that's right.
Hawkeye would totally be Bud in this scenario.
Oh, totally.
Lou in the ring and whatever. You could totally get all that. And I mean, of course, the movie had that extensive scene with the football game. And
yes.
So why not do boxing? It's cheaper. You only have to require minimal equipment, a couple of people, and of course, the you know units did that. They actually did have intramural boxing. So it's a perfect plot, you know, to work in. It does feel, again, it's a little more of kind of the third episode in a row of Hawkeye and Trapper pulling a scam. Again, yes. But again, it's for the right reasons, because they established that Nurse Cutler, while being very beautiful, and Marcia Strassman was quite fetching, that she's a good nurse. They have a scene where she, like, thwacks the instruments into Hawkeye's hand, and you can hear it with, like, a little thunk, and he's, like, very good. And so, you know, they established that. Yeah, they want her in the camp because they want to. You know,
they want her in the camp.
They want her in the camp, but it's also because she's a good nurse. It's again, they're doing something wrong, but it's for the right reasons. And so when Burns gets all moralistic on them, you know, it's easy to dismiss Frank because you're like, well, you're shut up, Frank. You know, you're being
right.
A jerk as usual. I feel this episode has one of the nastiest jokes the show ever put across, is where we see Trapper in training, and as I mentioned, he's using Frank's duffel bag as
yes.
a punching bag, and she walks by and she says, "Isn't that Frank's bag?" And Trapper goes, "I right. thought you were Frank's bag." Whoa, Trapper!
But a bump.
A little on the mean side. I mean, again, I mentioned that we have Marcia Strassman playing Margie Cutler. She would come back throughout the first season. This is really the only episode where she throws Hawkeye over for Trapper. After that, she would basically be kind of Hawkeye's girlfriend, and then it dawned on them, I think, later on that, you know, it didn't do them any. Same way with Nurse Dish, it didn't do them any good to have Hawkeye have a regular girlfriend. So they kind of phased her out, and of course
right.
she ended up having she did okay for herself on Welcome Back, Cotter. So she did all right. And here again we have Sorrel Book from The Dukes of Hazzard, Boss Hogg, playing General Barker, and this is another one of those indications that the MASH episodes were presented out of order by CBS, because here we've got him play. We've got Sorrel Book as General Barker, and yet later on, G. Wood as General Hammond will return as the general with no explanation. And that's and so they were showing these out of order because General Hammond was ostensibly the replacement. General Barker was a replacement for General Hammond, but yet Hammond will come back in later episodes. So CBS was just sort of picking which ones they wanted to run and running them without really worrying about the internal continuity.
Right.
I do like finding any like related MASH trivia I can find with these other actors. Sorrel Book, one of his other credits is 1979's The Cat from Outer Space, a Disney film, which featured both McLean Stevenson and Harry Morgan in the cast.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah, I saw that. My mom took me to that movie in 1979. So
how funny. Wow.
Features the two colonels, and they have scenes together. You see them together. So that's kind of a fun little detail. I mentioned this was directed by Hi Averback. He directed over 20 episodes of MASH, plus episodes of After MASH, plus episodes of the TV version of The Four Seasons, which was, of course, based on the Alan Alda movie, and featured Alan Arbus in the cast. So he went on to have a long career related to MASH. I mentioned it was written by Robert Klein. Robert Klein's two big credits, Weekend at Bernie's and Weekend at Bernie's 2.
Well, that's something to put on the mantle.
I'm sure he loves if you go to his IMDb page, and those are the top two credits you see in those little graphics. He must be just like, oh yeah, great, this is wonderful. Thanks everybody. And of course, the other big debut in this episode is William Christopher playing Father Mulcahy.
That's right.
Father Mulcahy is not in the second episode, and of course, in the first one, he's played by George Morgan. But here he makes his debut, and he gets a couple of good lines. I love when he sees how poorly Trapper is as a boxer. He says, I think we should pray for him. Like, thanks, Father. I like that detail. I can't imagine William Christopher, you know, landed this gig probably thinking, all right, this will last for a little while, not realizing it would give him 11 solid years of employment and worldwide fame.
And it would define the rest of his career. You know, it would be the first line of his obituary.
Yes, yeah. I love the detail, too, when he is counting out the boxer after he falls.
I was about to mention that, yeah.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and do that? I love that detail.
Well, he's doing the countdown like he's doing the cross.
Yeah.
And then when it's 10, when it's out, then he does the horizontal. You know, it was very clever.
It's a great little detail. Yeah, it feels like, I mean, it was probably written, but it feels a little ad-libby. So, and
that was my thought as well.
Yeah, Larry Gelbart said that about William Christopher, is that was the reason he was hired as opposed to George Morgan. He said that he could really make the most of the lines he was given. The one other, I was sort of curious as to what William Christopher was doing before he got MASH, and I found a credit. He was an actor on a show called Nichols. This was a Western. I've never heard of the show, but the cast includes James Gardner and Margot Kidder. I'm like,
wow.
There was a show with those two people together, and I've never heard of this?
Like, yeah, wow. Like,
the things that, as you mentioned, is the phrase you like to use, the things that go down the memory hole, you know? Like,
yeah.
What an amazing cast that is, to have James Gardner and Margot Kidder in a show together. That's just fantastic.
That's really fun. That's something.
What is your view, Zaki, of the kind of way the doctors treat the nurses here? Because they really do treat Margie as, you know, their sort of personal one-woman harem.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we have to contextualize with both the times that are being depicted and the times during which the show is produced. And I think that definitely in today's age, it's a little rapey, you know, but it's kind of the same situation as like watching Cheers and seeing Sam Malone. Sam Malone, in his womanizing aspect, was very much the heir to Hawkeye Pierce. And it's kind of the same thing where, yeah, I mean, if being honest, we don't, you know, that's not something that we want to lionize necessarily, but I think we want to be careful about giving it the side eye from a modern perspective too, because I mean, times have changed and that's a good thing.
Yeah. I always, the reason I sort of find it, you know, I guess for lack of a better term, acceptable, is that you always get the sense that the nurses aren't really under Hawkeye's or Trapper's thumb.
They give as good as they get.
Exactly.
The repartee.
Right. They don't. The doctors are certainly acting like they're cocks of the walk, but for the most part, you realize that you get the feeling that the nurses could refuse the doctors at any moment if they wanted to, and it's just sort of that's just what goes on at this camp, and so it's sort of like, oh, okay. And now there are some moments later on in later episodes where it really goes over the line, and we'll talk about that when we get to them. But at least in the beginning, you know, they are trying to romance Nurse Cutler. I mean, they want to keep her there for their own guilty reasons, but, you know, it's not like she's not, she has her own agency, you know, she can decide. I mean, and clearly at the end of the episode, she picks Trapper over Hawkeye, and they literally push him out of the frame because she's not interested in him anymore.
Right.
I love in the final scene where they're putting the stake on Trapper's eye for the bruise. And I thought, you know, later on they would establish that all the food at the MASH 477th is crap and it's all powdered. They were pretty liberal with a nice piece of meat there, just using it for Trapper's eye. You think they want to cook it up?
I had that thought today because I watched two episodes back to back, and I was watching I watched Requiem for Lightweight, and then I watched the Smell of Music from season 6. And they're talking about the powdered eggs and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, man, wish they had that steak from 5 seasons ago, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's like back they didn't realize all the jokes they could get out of, you know, like the fact that getting any sort of fresh food was probably impossible. One of the other actors I want to mention is John Orchard. He played Ugly John. He would appear through season 1. He actually returned to the show in season 8 playing a different character. He was in other movies like Ice Station Zebra and Bedknobs and Broomsticks. And, of course, the title for this episode, Requiem for a Lightweight, is a riff on the Playhouse 90 show Requiem for a Heavyweight, written by Rod Serling, who, of course, I think the Playhouse 90 episode Patterns really put him on the map because it was well-regarded. It starred the TV version starred Jack Palance, and, of course, there was later a movie version with Anthony Quinn and Jackie Gleason. And, you know, you can go down the rabbit hole on some of this stuff on IMDb. I was doing some other research on Requiem for a Heavyweight, and there was a BBC version in 1957 that starred Sean Connery and Michael Caine.
No kidding.
Like, wow! Like, that's...
not too shabby.
No! Talk about getting guys on the upswing. Holy jeez! I couldn't believe it. So, yeah, Requiem for a Heavyweight was a big, big deal, and so I'm assuming that the MASH writers... I mean, of course, these episode titles were never meant to be seen by the public anyway. They were for their own internal amusement, I guess. But Requiem for Heavyweight still sort of loomed large in the imagination of in pop culture. So, hence the title. And one other thing I wanted to mention is, did you notice in this episode on the outside shots how everybody seems to be glowing?
No.
Yeah, see, and there's shots of Hawkeye and Trapper where, like, there's this halo around them. And it's I don't know what kind of, like, film stock they were using or some sort of camera, whether they had, like, Vaseline on the lens. But there seems some sort of, like, old-timey movie glow around them. Yeah, I think they were, again, like you were saying, but they were sort of figuring the show out. I think they were trying to determine the look of the show and making it, wanted to look classy. But it's just in these first couple of episodes where you're like, wow, they're outside, and like there's like the sun is beaming. Maybe because they're in their white lab outfits, they're in their doctor's clothes. But like, I'm like, wow, these guys are really look like they're just shining out in the sun. It looks doesn't look too bad out there. Do you have a particular favorite line from this episode?
You said it already. I thought you were his bag. That cracked me up.
it's
very funny.
It's a mean joke. It's a really mean joke. My favorite line is I like when they are prepping the fight and. Trapper is saying, I think we should use a horseshoe. And Hawkeye says, a horseshoe is gauche. Ether is subtle. And Trapper's like, then let's dip the horseshoe in ether. Good plan. I like it. It was very good. So, yeah. I like that Hawkeye just does not take Trapper's worry seriously. You know, he's like, oh, you'll be fine. You're like, yeah, but I'm going to be the one in there getting the crap beat out of me, Hawkeye. Well, you're off on the side drinking martinis.
During the fight, it's very funny because when Hawkeye sees that they've switched out the ether, he's like, you stall him, I'll be right back. And then Trapper's like, you stall, how about you stall him, I'll be right back.
Yeah. And again, it is like a classic caper of these two.
It is.
And again, Henry goes along with it. I do love his whole bit where they get the bottle of ether and they kind of waves it at Henry. And Henry's like, I don't want to know about it. I love it, but I don't want to know about it. I love these.
You know, it's funny because you wonder, like, how would this episode have gone differently had it been Colonel Potter instead of Henry, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think they wouldn't even tell Colonel Potter. I think they would
probably
just,
not.
Yeah. They would just let, because they know that he would stop them. So they just like, all right, leave him out. But yeah, Henry is part of the gang. He can't officially be part of the gang. He always has to have that plausible deniability, but he is part of the gang. And like I said, and I like in the final moments where the guy lands on at Hallips and Frank and they're laying there on their back, they roll him off them and he like lands on their like their calves, the bottom part of their legs. And yeah. Loretta Swit loots this piercing scream. It's fantastic. It really hurts. What did your son watch this one with you?
Yeah, we just watched it this morning. I started it, and then he's, we see Trapper and Hawkeye walking out of the tent, and my kid's just like, what? What's going on? Like, he sees Trapper, and he's like, wait, what's going on here? Like, he didn't realize that I had put on an older episode.
Does he have a particular favorite era so far?
I don't think he looks at it in that way. To him, he just sort of takes it as it comes. Mm-hmm. So I think once he's able to view the show holistically, he'll be able to say, oh, I liked so-and-so better. I think he likes BJ more than Trapper. That's my sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I think partially just because he sort of hung out with BJ more, if you will, mm-hmm.
Right.
On the show. So
as I'm watching this episode play out on the screen in front of me, I am wondering, where did everybody eat while they were doing this boxing tournament? Because they're clearly in the mess tent. So where did everybody, did nobody eat for a whole day? Like, what's going on? I mean, these people need to get their meals, but everybody seems happy. They're sitting there in the benches and they're watching the fight and whatever. So, but yeah, it's a fun episode. It's plot wise, you could really transpose it, I'd say, to probably 1,000 different sitcoms. And I think over time, MASH would, get more and more specific with their plots. But, it's kind of goofy and it's silly and it has a nice, it's like I said at the beginning, it's Hawkeye and Trapper doing the wrong thing, but for the right reasons. They're doing it
exactly
because they want Nurse Cutler, and of course again they win because Nurse Cutler gets to stay behind, and she she gets impressed. She's like, "You fought for me," and I love that. Wayne Rogers has a great grin. He looks so happy when Nurse Cutler gives him the attention, and they push Hawkeye out of the frame. He looks so overjoyed. It's a really fun episode. It's a nice.
It
nice,
is.
Fun
I,
episode,
I so. Totally agree.
So I think that's going to do it for Requiem for a Heavyweight. So, Zachy, one thing I did want to mention before we sign off is for anybody who hasn't heard it, and I'm sure everybody has, come on, is Zachy did an episode of his Nostalgia Theater show where he interviewed Mike Farrell. I mentioned it on the first episode of the show. What was that like? What was it like talking to Mike Farrell?
It was really great. What you heard is what you got to some extent. I had to stop myself from geeking out.
Right, right.
Because I am just such a fan of not only his character and his work on the show, but just him as a person. And I've always been impressed by his thoughtfulness and his sense of kindness, mm-hmm. which I think really came through in the interview, and that has less to do with me than just the kind of person he is. Where whether we were talking about MASH, and my goodness, he is just a fountain of stories, some of which we've heard before. I think some of which I personally had not heard before. But above and beyond that, I mean, he's fiercely passionate about the things he believes in, and I think it helps, obviously, that from a political point of view, I'm very closely aligned with his politics, and as are you, I would imagine, and as is anybody who loves MASH, mm-hmm. I mean, I think the sense that really was cemented is that he is BJ Honeycutt, and there's the fact that he, this many years later, he's still remains engaged and passionate about the things that are going on in the world, I think I said this on the show, I can't remember, but I heard him on the Stephanie Miller show back in the mid 2000s, and that's he would come on occasionally and talk about politics and stuff, and I remember hearing him back then and being like, one of these days I want to be able to talk politics with Mike Farrell, and I got to do that.
Mm.
And it was a trip, man. And then I mentioned to him that my son watches the show, and he says, tell your boy I said hi. And I played that for Hamza, my oldest, and he started to blush a little bit. He got, he's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe BJ Honeycutt said hi to me,
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, I thank you privately, but I'm gonna thank you here on the air that you mentioned me to Mike Farrell on the show. And you mentioned like a sort of a take I had on the show, and I heard Mike Farrell referring to me saying he's exactly right. And the idea that Mike Farrell A knows that I exist, and got to hear for a second that I had a particular view of MASH that he said was exactly right, it meant the world to me. It really, really did. And so I have to thank you for bringing that up, because it was just I was listening to it very early in the morning. And I turned around and I mentioned, as soon as I heard it, I turned around to my girlfriend and I told her what I had just heard, you know, and I started getting overclaimed because it was like, it just Mike Fowles, BJ Huntington is one of my favorite all-time characters in all of fiction. And so it was an amazing moment. So I have to thank you for that, Zachy.
Oh, well, I mean, I think that says something about, you know, you and I mean, what an amazing journey, right? Because the truth of it is that this all started with me and Brian Hall, my partner, mentioning on the air that, you know, he's like, oh, I saw MASH, the movie, and we spent like 5 minutes talking about it. And then you reached out to us about coming on the show and talking about the movie. That made me say, hey, I want to revisit the movie. And then that made me say, hey, I'm going to rewatch the show. And then, you know, you brought me on your show to talk about the anniversary of the premiere. And then that got me in my head like, hey, I'm going to try to reach out to Mike Farrell. And so, I mean, when you look at all the connections, you know, you say, you know, all of this because of these little internet radio shows that we all do. And we don't know if anybody's even listening, but we just put it out there to the world. And look at the amazing things that happen.
Yeah, oh, it was unbelievable. Yeah, all because Brian just happened to put on MASH one day, which is...
Isn't that funny?
And he mentioned it. You know what I mean? He might have even watched it and not thought to bring it up on the show.
Yeah.
You know, the fact. So, yeah, it was an amazing thing. The idea, again, that Mike Farrell knows who I am is just really unbelievable. And just one last thing about that interview that I wanted to mention, the politics part of it. He mentioned that he has been on Sean Hannity's show a bunch of times. And I'm just like, why anyone would subject themselves to that is beyond me. And then I heard him say the reason he does it is not to change Sean Hannity's mind, because Sean Hannity's mind cannot be changed. But the idea was that he is on the show to even maybe convince two or three people that watch Sean Hannity that liberals are not the caricature that Hannity painted them to be. And Mike Farrell's attitude was, if that convinces two or three people, then it's worth it. And I thought, what an incredibly generous use of your own time and spirit to put up with Sean Hannity to maybe reach some people out there that you think might be reachable. I mean, I couldn't do it. I can't watch. Yeah. I can't listen to 15 seconds of Sean Hannity without wanting to throw my computer out into the street. But so for Mike Farrell to have that sort of presence of mind to do that is remarkable. And so it's like, yeah, he is, as you mentioned, he's BJ Honeycutt. He's exactly the guy who would want him to be.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, yep. It's extraordinary. So anyway, for anybody again who hasn't listened to that episode, go to Zachy's Nostalgia Theater show. There's a million great episodes plus the one I did. And you can listen to, there's some amazing interviews there talking about some really cool subjects. So Zachy, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate you doing this sleep deprived. I really appreciate you doing the show. Where can people find you on the internet?
Well, you can go to my website, zakyscorner.com. That's Z-A-K-I-S corner. That's also my Twitter, just minus the .com. And the Movie Film Podcast comes out every couple weeks. It's myself and my partner, Brian Hall, who is a comic book and TV writer. And as Rob mentioned, the Nostalgia Theater Show comes out usually about once a month, sometimes more, basically as the fancy strikes. And it features my interviews with the people behind the things we love and the famous fans who've made them special to us. And actually coming up in a few weeks on the Nostalgia Theater Show is my interview with Fief Sutton, who was a writer and executive producer of Cheers, as we mark 25 years since the finale of that series.
Wow. Another show. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. I can't wait to hear that. That'll be amazing.
I think you'll enjoy it. I had a blast with it.
Oh, I'm sure I will. So, yeah, thanks, everybody. Of course, you want to follow the show. You can go all the back episodes, all two of them so far, are on our network site, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com. And we're talking about MASH and stuff over on Twitter at MASH477CAST. So, again, thanks everybody for listening, and until the next episode, that is all.
So did you have to mobilize the duodenum?
Yeah, I thought there might be a retroperitoneal perforation. Oh. You know, there's a large hematoma in the area.
Yeah.
Do you two want to be alone?
Yeah, but not necessarily with each other.